Okay, so welcome back. The discussion today, continuing Tao Te Ching, approaching the end. This is the end, but not my only friend. So, today, 74, 75, 76, and next time, 77, 8, 79, 74, 75, 76, sorry. Today, 72, 3, 4. 72, 3, 4, and next time we'll start at 75, then 78, then 81, and see what we do, and that'll be it. Thank you for being here. Today we have three shorter chapters, and again, I see some discrepancy in the translations. Clearly you're going to see that Lao and Weili take the same words in some quite different ways in a few of these chapters. And both translations have value because they had advisors. They were not, you know, the king of the heap from the start. They had professors and advisors and guides and commentaries that they were working from. And that's the thing about Tao Te Ching, is that words can refer, the subject or the subject of certain statements in Tao Te Ching is variable. Is it pertaining, is it all the people that way, or is it the sage when he's that way? You'll see what's going on here. So let's just jump right in. And unfortunately, as I said, the best way to read Tao Te Ching is word by word by word. And then it's more than an hour for every few chapters, but perhaps an hour on every chapter or several hours on every chapter. And then you'll get it really, really deeply. And there is a book that somebody referred to, and it's on one of the earlier talks in the text description, a new translation that goes word by word. That's the best way. And sorry we can't do that here. We only can do an hour for three rather than an hour for one. Otherwise I'd never get finished with this. So let's go in. Tao Te Ching, chapter 72, starting with the Arthur Weili translation and then D.C. Lau. Arthur Weili, chapter 72. Never mind if the people are not intimidated by your authority. A mightier authority will deal with them in the end. Do not narrow their dwelling or harass their lives. For the very reason that you do not harass them, they will cease to turn from you. Therefore, the sage knows himself but does not show himself, knows his own value, but does not put himself on high. Truly, he rejects this, but takes this. That's an old phrase that we've seen a couple of times. How do I know it? Because of it. He takes this and rejects that, or rejects that and takes this. Contrast of ways of living. Moral guidance. This is ethical philosophy. Chinese, mystical, spiritual, ethical philosophy. Ethical teaching. Ethical culture. And so, this is from the perspective of the Taoist sage, speaking about the Taoist sage and giving counsel to one who aspires to learn the Taoist way deeply. So, let me jump into D.C. Lau, or pull it up, and then we'll dance with both of them together. D.C. Lau, chapter 72. When the people lack a proper sense of awe, then some awful visitation will descend upon them. Do not constrict their living space. Do not press down on their means of livelihood. It is because you do not press down on them that they will not weary of the burden. Hence, The sage knows himself but does not display himself, loves himself but does not exalt himself, therefore he discards the one and takes the other. Meaning, he knows himself but doesn't display, loves himself but doesn't exalt. Knows himself is the same in both translations, Weili and Lao. Does not show or display himself is the case for both. Knows his own value, different than Lao saying loves himself. So sometimes one is more accurate than the other. I'm not sure if the original was love himself, but and self-love is also kind of another matter, meaning in psychology and in the way of healing and from the raw material, which is a higher self perspective. The raw material is spiritual teaching from the level of higher self, Atman, late sixth density, not from the level of complete and perfect enlightenment or Nityananda or Gautama or the sages, whoever, that are finished with becoming and identity and any form of manifestation, any form of seeking. So one could consider that Ra talks about love a lot because, as they say, the purpose of third density is to learn the ways of love, which is green ray, which is not the same as second principle, godly, divine love, which is really what allowed creation to appear, to bespoke. Creation is a bespoke affair. It was spoke by the one that is, or the one infinite creator. And Buddhists don't talk about a Buddhist perspective, or at least from Gautama, would never say love yourself. Never, never, never. It doesn't mean hate yourself. It means the self and the way to freedom is not conceived that way as requiring I love myself, because it strengthens conceit in a apparently substantial self, which is called folly or falsity or emptiness. So Ra's saying when they get to seventh density, they'll be free of identity. That means that there's no substantial identity ever to be bound by. We're bound by a falsely conceived, illusory, apparently substantial but ultimately empty identity. It's the thought-based identity, sankhara, the sense of self fashioned by continual thinking. It can be dropped in moving out of sixth density because it isn't real. Whatever is real cannot be dropped. Only the unreal can be dropped. And so thick notions of identity, conceived notions of identity, are all dropped going to seventh density. So here we can say love yourself is good for healing. It's certainly critical to feel care and kindliness and heartful, warm care for self, of course. And there is no unchanging or essential, metaphysically essential, substantial self to be loved. And that's why it's questionable whether the original text said love himself. But this love himself includes knows his own value. That's called self-appreciation. So there's a difference between self-love and self-appreciation. I don't think there's any problem with self-love, and ultimately everybody will learn. And the insubstantiality or emptiness of identity doesn't exclude the value of love. But even that is changed. You see, this is why the higher the teacher, the more rare you'll find them, and you'll hear them, and they speak here in this Saha world of dust and shadow, because, as far as I know, the vision from the top must be heavily modified to conform to the vision of beings in third density. And so this is just one example of it, that somebody can say, Mr. D.C. Lau, who's probably a nice guy, would imagine that Lao Tzu is saying, love yourself, when a real sage probably doesn't think that way at all. They don't hate themselves, but they wouldn't say, oh yes, I love myself. It just doesn't happen. But there's no distortion. There doesn't have to be any distortion there either. They don't say, oh yes, I love myself, which is, you know, has a relative value at certain portions of the path. But I'd be very surprised if third stage, fourth stage awakened beings in Buddhism or those Nityananda or Gautama say, I love myself. It just doesn't happen, because their awareness of what I is quite different. And even their awareness of love is quite different. But down here on the ground, it might be useful to talk this way, for sure. So love yourself is akin to knowing your own value deeply. Yes, that I think is a nice way of putting it. Because what is love anyway, right? People don't even know what it is. I love ice cream. That's not love. That's strong liking, strong preference, nothing more. So this is not little stuff, right? People should know what the hell they're saying when they use words, right? So anyway, know your own value. Is very excellent and important. Ra said, self is a being of infinite worth. Worth is a question of value. So infinite worth. That doesn't mean I'm the best or I'm perfect. It just means what I is of inestimable value. What I is. But doesn't put himself on high, because he's free. He's also aware that high and low are relative, right? All is the one infinite creator, right? Nityananda said, everyone is God, this kind of thing. What is I anyway? You can say that it's empty. You can also say that it's infinity. So, both. it's all, and all is of inestimable value, of supreme value, but that doesn't mean I put myself over anybody. So does not exalt himself, for sure. So you can see, this is a teaching to the sage come ruler. The sage who might be a ruler, or a good ruler, or us in working with people, or being with people. And so, don't mind if people are not intimidated by your authority. Is a little bit different than when people lack a proper sense of awe, some awful visitation will descend upon them. So never mind if people are not intimidated by your authority. Mightier authority will deal with them in the end. My sense is that both of these translations are probably lacking. People are not intimidated by your authority? Or is it people don't have awe? Quite different. So certainly it's people not intimidated or not respectful. So you can just see that D.C. Lau probably using certain the translation of the word intimidated as awe, then it gets very complicated. So both translations are deficient, and yet we can get something from them both too. Certainly, it's useful common advice. Not get attached to how people react to your activity. If people are not intimidated by your authority, and this is a very interesting matter. I mean, this is a certain planet of profound delusion. Humanity is a group of profound deluded beings. This is a profoundly deluded soul group. Now, compared to animals, they're all right, but compared to other 3D groups that are wholly positive, they're really quite slow on the ball. And compared to their own future, they're really quite unclear. So they can make a lot of good stuff, but they can't think too clearly. And so it can happen. It happens here all the time that someone knows better than another, and the one that doesn't know looks down on the one that does know. It happens all the time. I mean, Gautama was scorned by a couple of ascetics and other groups, and Yeshua was slaughtered, was killed on the cross, or killed at least, right? And lots of people turn away from love and goodness, and lots of people have turned away from soul. Lots of people don't believe there is soul or higher dimensions or God. Okay? Well, they've rejected the heart of their being. Okay? And they'll just wander in samsara for a long time. Fine. And so, don't be surprised if they consider that the low is high and the high is low, or the valuable is empty and nothing. So, a mightier authority will deal with them in the end, for sure. Everybody will have their time to face the self and to face the truths that they've avoided. Then there's this sort of guidance to the sage, to the ruler, don't be heavy-handed with the people. And again, this is useful advice for us in just fine-tuning our way of being with other people. And so, wanting people to be intimidated by us is certainly a problem. Wanting people to listen to us may be a problem too, because when they're not listening, they have good reason for it. Maybe they're distorted or busy with their thought. But if somebody doesn't want to listen, it's probably wise to stop talking and then let them go their own way. And of course, if that's a couple or a close family member or friend, it's a problem. So, but the basic idea is, if you push, there'll be resistance. If you allow, there may be a welcoming. And so pushing or forcing is not the Taoist way, and Wu Wei, no action or no forcing or no no artifice, no unnecessary activity. That's the way of not generating resistance, which is certainly is the yin over the yang, which is the heart, the way of heart over mind, meaning leading with love and acceptance, leading with a peaceful heart rather than leading with a busy, demanding mind. It's very important to be receptive. So constrict their living space, or control and order them or others, leads to resistance. And so the more you ask, the more you're establishing selfishness. I mean, there's some people, they just don't get. There are a lot of clueless folks in this world, you know. I mean, I'm clueless in my own ways, too. But there are a lot of people who don't realize that there's work to do. It's called development of consciousness and morality and awareness. They have no clue that they have no clue, and that there's even work to do. And so they ask, and they ask, and they ask, and they want, and they want, and they want, and they don't know. That they're basically facilitating bad feeling and the backlash that leads to the other person not wanting to give much at all, because they feel put upon. So the more you demand, the more you push, the less you'll get in the end. And yet, you know, it depends on the situation, right? There are certain situations where you don't demand and you don't push and you don't press and don't harass them and don't interfere in any kind of disruptive way. And then they leave and never see you again. All right. And so then there's that, you know, Eido Roshi comment. If he comes, don't refuse him. If he goes, don't pursue him. And so Yet sometimes if he comes, he needs to be refused. And sometimes if he goes, or she, he or she go, they need to be pursued. So, but generally, if the approach is respectful, if he comes, don't refuse him. And if the departure seems right in from the greater perspective of path and timing, my path and yours and the timing, then if he goes, don't pursue him is useful too, meaning let him go. Let it go. Sometimes it's necessary or more valuable to pursue, for sure. So the Taoist way is, if you don't want trouble, if you don't want conflict, don't make conflict. If you don't want it, don't make it. Or if you don't want it, look into how you may well be making it. So if you don't want it, if you're having something you don't want, you might want to look into how you're co-creating it. That's the point. If you have some kind of trouble or conflict, we should look into how we are creating it or co-creating it. If I'm co-creating it, I'm creating it. I'm not the only one creating it, but I am creating it, meaning I'm making trouble for you and me. So if I make trouble for you, I'll make trouble for me. So if you don't want to make trouble for yourself, don't make trouble for other. That's reasonable. And so that's very Taoist, with a very clear understanding, like Heraclitus. Taoism is profoundly Heraclitian, no doubt. And so the upward-downward way, and fire and water go to equal parts, and there's inevitable, change. Pantare, all things change, and eternal cycles and alternation and polarity. And so if you don't want trouble, consider how you may have been making trouble. And if you love peace, consider what's the basis of peace. So the sage, the one who has achieved much, doesn't consider he's achieved much, and certainly doesn't lord it over other people, and certainly doesn't push over others whatever they've gained or go or know. And what that often means is being alone, standing alone. Back to that, standing alone. Kagavisara, back to the rhinoceros. wander alone like a rhinoceros if you can't find one who's your equal or your better. Even that's a teaching that very few people don't want to... we have betters. We have our betters. We have our superiors. We have our bitters and our betters. Our betters are those who've already processed comparable bitters. They have turned their bitters into love light. And thus they are our betters, I'd say. And so there are very few people who want to hear that. Because, okay, I got it. Your mother and your father put you down and were very hypercritical and demeaning and controlling and manipulative. And look down on you, and so you people are still smarting off of low self-esteem or over-criticism from family. They don't want to hear a teaching that says you know nearly nothing. It hurts. Don't tell me I know nearly nothing. My parents always beat the hell out of me and told me I was a schmuck. I don't want to hear I know nearly nothing. But actually, it's true. We know nearly nothing. And so, okay, so that pain has to be healed before the person can feel strong enough to see how much is left to do and how far we are from completion. Anyway, I'm just doing my best, and so are you, and it's a very particular group of souls that we've chosen to be here with this incarnation, I must say. So, let's go to 73. See, I mean, every single one of these I could talk on an hour, every one of these chapters, because they really are deep, and they interlace multiple important metaphysical realities and spiritual principles and principles of self-development on the path, and psychological dynamics, and interpersonal dynamics. All that stuff is in play. So, anyway, let's go to the next. Tao Te Ching, Chapter 73. Arthur Whaley. He whose braveness lies in daring slays. He whose braveness lies in not daring gives life. Of these two, either may be profitable or unprofitable. But, quote, heaven hates what it hates. None can know the reason why. End quote. Must be a passage of the time. Wherefore the sage, too, disallows it. Meaning hating. For it is the way of heaven, not to strive, but nonetheless to conquer. Not to speak, but nonetheless to get an answer. Not to beckon, yet things come to it of themselves. Heaven is like one who says little, yet nonetheless has laid his plans. Heaven's net is wide. Coarse are the meshes, yet nothing slips through. Lovely Taoist philosophy. So there's braveness, there's courage. The problem with this is that the word that's translated as daring has only the translation, is only translated as daring. And so there's not that much that can be pulled out of it, or at least at this level of etymological or philological analysis, meaning analyzing just that word, dare. It's actually the third word, gan. So, brave regarding daring does killing. And then it's brave regarding brave, or the brave one who doesn't dare lives. So what is this dare? Dare seems to be engage in competition, engage in conflict, competitive-based engagement, compete, or contend. This word contend. It's probably akin to the word contend. It's sort of challenge. The opposite of accept. Not accept. Not accept how. Not accept by seeking to get or modify. And so this is yet another discussion of the way of the worldly man versus the sage or the Taoist. And so their bravery can be in the service of soul evolution. Bravery can be in the service of increasing distortion and going to hell. Or increasing one's karmic load and going to hell. likewise, we saw in another sutta the other day, this quality called indomitable, cannot be domitated. Cannot be dominated. That there's indomitability, meaning untamability, cannot be ended, cannot be dominated, cannot be changed, cannot be put down, of the materialist-minded person's pride and wrong view. Their conceit and their annihilationist materialism, meaning they believe that there's nothing more than physicality, and that after the body falls to the dust, they shall be annihilated. So all the materialists are called annihilationists, in a pure reading of the word annihilationist, expecting their own identity annihilation. Very cool, man. Have a good time. Expecting annihilation. It's kind of a pitiful way to live, huh? So, the annihilationist who's convicted, the convicted skeptic, atheist, nihilist, has in their own mind certainty that their materialist view is correct. They are indomitable in that and cannot be changed. Likewise, in the sutta, I'm not sure if it's Amaganda Sutta, the idea is that a Buddha or a fully enlightened person is indomitable in virtue and awakening and right view or living in truth. They're indomitable too. And so likewise, bravery or courage or daring or strength, not daring in this sense, but let's say bravery, courage, can be the courage to kill and the courage to heal. The courage to further distort and the courage to develop love wisdom. This is a very important point. Certain qualities of mind are, to some degree, evolutionarily neutral. To some degree, neutral. And can be, you know, you can do the right thing for the wrong reasons. You can, the path to hell paved with good intentions. One can have good intentions with a lack of wisdom. Often called love over wisdom. The martyr, the naive, the gullible, the kindly, but not thinking deeply enough. That person can do terrible evil or be a tool of evil. We see it everywhere in the world today. So that's kind of a problem. So likewise, bravery, there's the bravery of fighting contending to get what I want and kill. There's the bravery of acceptance and non-interference and supporting and allowing, you know, it depends on timing, obviously, what's right. The bravery of not contending and the kindliness of silence. There's the kindliness of well-spoken, timed, good words. There's the kindliness of well-timed silence and an appreciation of silence. Very heavy stuff here. So either may be profitable or unprofitable, meaning it all depends. Heaven hates what it hates. None can know the reason why. I'm not sure about that, but their sage, too, disallows it. Disallows what? He hates what he hates? I don't know. It disallows, I think, seeks the profitable, not the unprofitable, and not to do what's hateful. The way of heaven, not to strive, but nonetheless to conquer. How about not to interfere, but nonetheless to succeed? Not to speak, but to get an answer. Meaning you can know without speaking. You can know the other person by watching them. You can know by listening to them. Much can be known without speaking. Many answers can be provided. We can get many answers for ourselves by asking ourselves and answering. People need to learn how to do that. If you depend on others for your answers, you're in trouble. And so, particularly in close relationship, why did you do that? People should know. You should know why they did that. I mean, at least somewhat. You should know your partner's psychodynamics, right? You should know your own psychodynamics, right? So, one can know why another is that way if you feel where he or she's coming from. Get a sense of the feeling of the other person, meaning how they are, and don't be so self-centered. Think about the other person's feeling in their life, in their terms, and conform or at least adjust yourself somehow to the reality of their process that is quite independent of you. Not everything revolves around me, obviously. And so, knowing others without bothering them with questions. How about that? One can know. You have to open heart, mind, green, blue. When the green, blue, indigo is well developed, the reality of others' minds impresses our own. Our mind is impressible, impressionable. We may get an impression. We may know their mind without them speaking. More and more. I'm not perfect, but I'm learning that too. Very doable. Not to beckon, yet things come to it of themselves, meaning don't ask and it'll come. Sometimes. Sometimes there are cases that you want something and it won't come if you don't ask. Absolutely. So, but there is truth to this, that sometimes seeking to get is a guarantee of never getting. And not seeking to get absolutely is the necessary condition for something naturally of its own coming to us. This is the Taoist. The Taoist has this kind of thinking. The Taoist is a cool guy or gal. The Taoist is cool and understands, well, I want it to come to me from this angle. It's like Aikido or these very subtle martial arts. If I nod my head to the left, after several cycles and phases of change, it will turn around and come back to me on the right. It can be known, you know. Absolutely. So, some people are very cool, and they know things like that. Heaven is like one who says little, yet nonetheless has laid his plans. Heaven's net is wide. Coarse are the meshes, yet nothing slips through. So, the mills of the gods grind slow, but they grind exceedingly fine. Meaning, the way of creation or phenomena, the natural flow or sequence of phenomena, the creational system, the system of phenomena, and their processes and sequences, is very slow, generally. Things take a long time. This dopey group of souls here is going to take another 10 cycles before a majority of them are out of their density, it seems to me. So come back, check in with me in 750,000 years. I think we'll probably see that most of these souls are in 4D positive. So that's the mills of the Logos grinding exceedingly slow and yet fine, meaning in that 750,000 years, which is the 75,000 year 3D cycle times 10 in accord to the raw material. After that amount of time, most of these souls will really be solidly over that 51% sort of the other, which really means a certain development of the seven rays sufficiently to take the light, the green ray light, the light of green ray and fourth density, and be centered in love and goodness and kindness, more or less. And so, coarse are the meshes, yet nothing slips through. It's in God's hands. It's in the logo. It's all in accord with logoic plan. But it's not the plan, it's not a top-down plan. That causality is, we're going to get into the roots of this. It's very deep stuff, right? We're talking about cosmology, the nature of the cosmos, and ontology, the nature of being, teleology, the nature of ends, or the philosophy or study of ultimate ends. What's the purpose of this cosmology with this beingness that we're experiencing that we don't understand much at all? I mean, do you understand what you are? Give me a break. So, dumbo humanity thinks it understands, but most people are humble and decent. It's the leadership and the so-called experts that are the real problem to me. Because they presume they know so much and they know so little. They're so arrogant. I mean, this is... human leadership is unbelievably arrogant. They presume they know so much, yet they know so little. It's very strange for me. So, the meshes, or the... what's the mesh, right? It's the netting... the heaven's net, the net by which heaven catches souls, Soulcatcher, Dreamcatcher.net. The nature of creation, right, the ontology of cosmology, the true nature of the creation that we're living in, cares for all within it. You know, God is love, right? So the nature of light is love. The substance, if we have to use the word substance, of form is light, whose nature is love. And so the very basis of vibration is love, but it isn't green ray love. It's universal provision and enablement, enabling love. Let there be is love. And so the letting there be, the light whose nature is love, is the love of heaven. And much is allowed. Beings are allowed to go their own way by their free will and experience consequences of their decisions in thought, word, and deed. Yet, in the end, all are saved or all return home. So goes the view. Although I must say that there is provision for dissolution of body, mind, spirits in certain cases. DC Lau 73. He who is fearless in being bold will meet with his death. He who is fearless in being timid will stay alive. Completely wrong translation, in my limited view. Of the two, one leads to good, the other to harm. It's not timid. Heaven hates what it hates. Who knows the reason why? anyway. Therefore, even the sage treats some things as difficult. That's wise. The way of heaven excels in overcoming, though it does not contend. In responding, though it does not speak. In attracting, though it does not summon. In laying plans, though it appears slack. The net of heaven is cast wide. Though the mesh is not fine, yet nothing ever slips through. So, interesting, you can see in one chapter from one translator, Lau here, what I would say are some beautiful lines, and then some surprisingly terrible translation as well. I really do not think that, you see, this notion, second line, he's fearless in being timid. This is so wrong. Now, maybe for DC Lau, who is either from Hong Kong or China or Chinese American, timid doesn't have the same association that it does, the connotation of the word timid. In the 40s or 50s, whenever he was writing or translating, it might have been different. Timid meaning quiet or reserved. But today, timid really means cowardly and fearful. Fearless in being fearful. The word timid was never used, actually. It was simply dare, no dare. That's it. The first two lines are gan or bu gan. Bu gan or gan. That's it. And so there's one character difference between the first line and the second. And the word, the difference is the word not in the second line. Not the word, not applied to the word daring in both lines. So it's daring, not timid. And so you can see how people make trouble by defining empty space, defining, adding a new interpretation to a negation. A negation is just a negation. It may add other qualities, but it's actually simply an absence of something. You can say that that absence of something has certain qualities, but first and foremost, it's an absence. So it's daring, not daring. Bold, not bold. That's it. Not timid. And so, be careful over analyzing. So, be careful that we don't tangle ourselves up in confusion in the attempt to get clarity and get out of confusion. Don't go to confusion when you want to leave confusion. Of the two, one leads to good, the other to harm. And so it's a matter of contending, and he nails it perfectly down the line, saying the way of heaven excels in overcoming, though it doesn't contend. And so it doesn't strive but conquers. How about does not contend but succeeds? Doesn't strive, doesn't contend, but succeeds. They're saying conquer or overcoming. It may be that the original was that martial, M-A-R-T-I-A-L, meaning aggressive or war referencing, conquering and overcoming. Maybe that's where the original had that feeling. Because this also, I mean, Lao Tzu was considered a governmental administrator. One of the administrative class. I forgot the term for it, but... And so it may be, obviously we can see this is possible. There's some guidance to the ruler who does engage in warfare now and then. And so, but I think one can succeed without conflicting, without contending, without a certain type of striving. Striving and seeking are about the same to me. It's just that strive has a little more connotation of conflict or challenge. And again, you can't say, it's silly to say we should be a certain way all the time. But in general, the Taoist answer is don't make trouble. Don't make conflict. Don't interfere. Don't manipulate. Don't try to dominate. Allow and be with. And less is more. A few words is often better than many. And little action is better than much in many cases. And so that's the Taoist ruler tries to be like the Taoist sage. And the Taoist sage tries to be like Tao and Tao De, heaven. That's the point. So heaven, like one who says little, the way of heaven responds but doesn't speak, doesn't summon, doesn't speak, isn't controlling, isn't contending. And that's akin to a wide net where nothing slips through. And so you can see, it's very interesting. This is just the way it is with classical Chinese. Wei Li translates the last two lines as, heaven's net is wide, coarse are the meshes, but nothing slips through. Lao says, the net of heaven is cast wide. So is the net wide, or is it cast wide? Same? Different? Either? Who knows? So we can certainly say heaven's net is wide. We can certainly say that the net of heaven is cast wide. It's a wide net cast wide, meaning it's big. What is it? It is basically like the way of salvation. That's what we're talking about here. Heaven's net is that which catches the fishes. What fishes? Souls. Catches how? Catches in this way means save, not hurt, not eat, but universal beneficence is wide and deep and broad and everywhere. Divine beneficence, logoic love, is everywhere, up, down, all around. It's not controlling and manipulating, but nothing is excluded from it. That's the point. That's the idea, that the meshes are coarse or not fine or not lovely or not restrictive, meaning the fish in the sea or the beings in the octave do as they wilt, and some of them then wilt because they willed it. So they wilt and fall apart. And eventually, down the line, everyone calls home. At least it seems to be. All right, let's go to 74. Tao Te Ching 74, the last for today. Let me see the time. All right. Arthur Whaley. Tao Te Ching, chapter 74. The people are not frightened of death. What, then, is the use of trying to intimidate them with the death penalty? And even supposing people were generally frightened of death and did not regard it as an everyday thing, which he's saying they do, which of us would dare to seize them and slay them? There is the Lord of Slaughter, always ready for this task, and to do it in his stead is like thrusting oneself into the master carpenter's place and doing his chipping for him. Now, quote, he who tries to do the master carpenter's chipping for him is lucky if he does not cut his hand, end quote. So, master carpenter, like Yeshua, is God, or the Logos, or the universe, or Tao Te, the way Tao, or Source, manifests and supports, maintains creation, maintains existence. Existence is maintained by its cycles, by its bases. Huh? I mean, planets keep going around suns, and solar systems keep going around galactic centers, and galaxies have their orbit or their relation to other galaxies, and bodies know how to maintain themselves up to a point, and instinct for the animals and the plants, and the rocks do their own thing too. Humans have free will and experience consequences of their choices, and die and are reborn, and have experience that they may they learn from slowly or quickly. The Taoist doesn't interfere with all that and appreciates it and helps it along. If it's straight, I help it along. Creation is a straight deal, and meaning creation is fair. It's fair. And the annihilationists don't know that or don't believe that, and the skeptics and the scientisms, the people who believe in science and materialism, I mean, they're just materialists. I mean, I believe in science. It means there is provability. That's all. There's provability. Okay, I believe in science. But that doesn't mean that human science is the only way of knowing. Anyway, the master carpenter, as a term for Tao or Tao Te, or the Logos, or creation, or the law of karma, or the way things are, that which maintains existence or allows creation to continue, has its own way. And then there's a human way. And it's very rare that the human way, that an individual human way, doesn't interfere with the Tao Te way, the way of Tao, the Tao as the way that the creation supports itself. We're supported by creation supporting itself. There are very few people who know what that means. And so the universe cares about itself, and that's what cares for us. And making trouble in that, or when we have trouble, it's because we've interfered somewhat with the way of peace and harmony, which is really getting stuck in lower triad blockage again. That's all. And so this chapter refers to the way of Tao, or the way of Tao, the way of the way, the operation of Tao, the heart of Tao, the functional manifestation of Tao, as bringing beings what they need. And those that are ready to die, die. And those that are to be killed, get killed. It's a sort of fatalistic view. You can say that it's supposing that there's some plan. There's no plan, and I know it, says the materialist or nihilist. How do you know it? because there's no proof that there's a plan. Oh, really? So having no proof proves that there's nothing, right? Absence of proof is proof of absence? Of course not. So they're always, their logic is always shoddy. And so how clear a mind can a being have who believes that ultimately he'll be annihilated? That his annihilation is coming in 20 or 40 or 60 years. 40 or 50 years from now, I'll be annihilated and never exist again. How clear-minded could such a person be about anything? So this is very much about the ruler and in imposing penalty. The first point is that what's the point of the death penalty when people are not afraid of death? And even if they were afraid, why should you take that obligation or responsibility? You shouldn't. The ruler shouldn't take the obligation. So it means a Taoist is a pacifist versus Krishna, who's advising Arjuna in the Mahabharata to do his thing, right? The Mahabharata. Krishna talking to Arjuna saying, you got to do your danda, man, and kill them. Very different than the Taoist who says, why would any of us seize them and slay them anyway? Different. There's a time for this and a time for that. One must know these things, and I don't have any final answers either. So the point here is so that the ruler doesn't interfere with the way of heaven. That the ruler or us in living our lives doesn't interfere with greater powers. And so that's the thing about people too. They'll save themselves eventually. The one that is incorrigible is only incorrigible now. And maybe for a few more lifetimes. But eventually, they'll get with the program and or develop love, wisdom, love, light. And we shouldn't be upset and contend or strive to intervene or change and manipulate or modify even or impose even what we think is a good idea or good plans in some cases. It's better to leave it alone. That's non-contending, non-interfering, and trust that a greater plan, a greater support is in play. And so he who tries to do the master carpenter's chipping for him is lucky if you don't cut his hand. So playing God leads to trouble. And over control. I mean, influence and controlling are different. So there's wise influencing and there's manipulating or control, seeking to control, which is unhelpful or non-dharmic. And so you can get into trouble, and sometimes you can look at, I just cut my hand, meaning I just had some trouble in my life, in body, in interpersonal relationship, or at work, or here or there, or with family member. I just got my hand cut, meaning I just had trouble. I just had pain. I have an illness. I have an injury. I had a blow-up. I had a breakup. How did I make it? How did I make this trouble? Was it that I tried to do something I shouldn't have done. I spoke when I should have been quiet. I acted when I should have been at ease and passive or non-interventionist. How did I make it? I went to the right when I should have gone to the left or when I didn't need to. Something like that. There was unnecessary and distorted activity preceding some kind of problem. How did this problem happen? I co-created it. How? Well, I might have done something when I didn't need to. I might have done something that was distorted and made more trouble. I might have acted without knowing, or acted ignorantly, or rashly, or my motivations were confused and I didn't know. Or I was insensitive to how it would be received, or how my activity or my speech would be received, or what would happen, or I didn't know what the hell I was doing, and I took a chance through a Hail Mary pass that got intercepted, and they got a touchdown, and I am the unhappy fellow now. So, it really means consider a greater power in play. Or consider that greater power is always in play. And don't go beyond the bounds of what's yours. What does that mean? You gotta figure that out. I mean, the Taoist is very subtle. And like Aikido, makes great action, makes great effect by small action. Success without contending. Or influence without manipulating or control. Less is greater. And, I mean, that's very true. When the signal is loud, the subject recoils. When the signal is faint, the subject attends. Meaning, it's the theory of homeopathy. So, the higher potencies have less and less and less physical ingredient or substance in the water, in the liquid. they shake it gazillion times, and they dilute it, and the strong, most kick-ass potencies have nearly no, or absolutely negligible physical substance left. It's all what? Fantasy? It's all vibrational? It's all radionic? It's some kind of so the smaller the physical, the greater the spiritual. And the bigger the physical, the less the spiritual. Commonly. So the big man may actually be a weakling, and the little man may actually be a tyrant. The little body, you know, like the myth of the dragon queen Asian woman, right? The little Chinese matriarch of the family. She's 5'2" or more, like 4'10" or 11". Meanwhile, everybody's held in thrall and afraid. So sometimes the less the physical, the greater the spiritual. Or the less the physical, the greater the mind-spirit. And the greater the mind-spirit, the less the physical. Or the greater the physical, the less the mind-spirit. And so, anyway, DC Lau, and then I'll get out of here. Chapter 74. When the people are not afraid of death, wherefore frighten them? Wherefore frighten them with death? Meaning, why frighten them with death? Were the people always afraid of death, and were I able to arrest and put to death those who innovate, then who would dare? Okay, that's really strange. There is a regular executioner whose charge it is to kill on behalf of the executioner is what is described as chopping wood on behalf of the master carpenter. In chopping, you can see he was really confused here. In chopping wood on behalf of the master carpenter, there are few who escape hurting their own hands instead. I think Lau was getting tired. So, if the people, you know, it's like, if it doesn't have coercive power, why are you involved in using it? If they're not afraid of death, why frighten them with death? If it doesn't work, why are you doing it? If it makes trouble, why are you doing it? If you're making trouble for yourself or other, why are you doing it? Maybe you don't know you're making trouble, but if you look, you'll find. Then I think there's a couple of lines that look like a little really confused translation here. Were the people afraid of death? Were I able to arrest and put to death those who innovate? Who would dare? So what? Is that some... So don't put to death those who are innovators, okay? That's cool, because that discourages others. There's a regular... This is where he falls off the cliff. There's a regular executioner whose charge it is to kill. That's the Lord of Slaughter. This is really a reference not to a guy or the executioner of the kingdom. It's a reference to the fact that the universe has an intelligent, is intelligently supportive and caring for all beings in ways greater than we can ourselves. Higher self is taking care of certain things, or much, within God's plan, the Logoic plan, in ways that we can't even conceive. And so don't worry. It's not all your responsibility. And there is a universal, or there is the function in Tao Te of killing, really means terminating. Really, it means ending that which what needs to be ended or has finished its cycle and will just naturally end. That is just part of creation, and it isn't our problem, or it isn't our responsibility to do it in one's stead, like, you know, so to take over, to presume responsibility and assume that we must do what indeed is a universal function is a way of getting your hand cut or get in trouble. So to kill on behalf of the executioner is chopping on wood on behalf of the master carpenter. It's basically taking, it's supplanting the proper power or authority whose responsibility it is. Supplanting the one with responsibility by ourselves, presuming that it's our responsibility and assuming responsibility, presuming I'm the one that must act because I assume it's my responsibility when it isn't. And so don't presume too much. Don't assume unless you know what you're assuming. Check your assumptions, or else you'll make an ass of you and me, said Felix. And so, assumption is a big problem, and most everyone has lots of assumption, and it's a really harmful matter, actually. So I think that's what's going on here. We're saying, mistakenly presumed responsibility for action, or to take care, to execute something, meaning to perform some kind of activity, based on mistaken assumption, mistakenly assumed responsibility, or presumed leadership, is the way to get into trouble. And so you can say that at some level, in some way, a lot of interpersonal problems between the individual and the group, and the individual and a partner or friend, or family, partner, whatever, is associated with unrecognized assumptions and mistakenly presumed responsibility. Unrecognized assumption and mistakenly presumed responsibility. This is why I'm in my room, not in front of an audience. It's easier to do it this way. So, it is true. There are unrecognized, confused, mistaken, distorted assumptions. Meaning, the person, we're not seeing it clearly. We think we're seeing it. We're seeing it wrongly. We're seeing that person wrongly, or the situation. And then, too, we presume responsibility to act in correction of our distorted assumption of what's happening. We misperceive or misinterpret. We don't know that. It becomes an assumption or a perspective that we don't look into or check. Then, in the face of that, we believe that we need to act to support it or deny it or change it or challenge it or do something to fix it or correct it or modify it, presuming our responsibility that we ought to be the one to do so. And so, distorted, unrecognized assumptions leading to conflict-generating activity based on wrong responsibility, wrong assumption, mistaken assumption, and confused responsibility is absolutely the way to get trouble. And it happens commonly in relationship, actually. So I think that's what it means. Few there are who would escape, hurt their own hands instead. Don't do God's work, do your own work. Don't do their work, do your own work. Don't do the work of, don't pretend or try to do the work of a greater power. But it really means make sure that you're doing your own work. Make sure that the work you're doing is yours. Meaning the life you're living is yours. Make sure you're living your life in accord with who you really are. That's kind of important. Anyway, that'll be it for today. Next time, we'll look at Tao Te Ching 75, 76, 77. And then a couple more classes after that. So anyway, I hope it was useful. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Arthur Whaley and DC Lau. Take good care of yourselves. See you next time, and good night.